relief factor, pain relief that's natural, pain relief that works, and pain relief that attacks the source of the pain. That's the experience of tens of thousands of Americans who are taking Relief Factor right now. See their incredible video endorsements at ReliefFactor.com and then order your three-week quick starter pack for just $19.95. That's less than a dollar a day. Find out if it can work for you like it works for me by ordering your three-week quick starter pack today. ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Be the next success story.
Welcome, dear friends, to America First One-on-One with me, your host, Sebastian Gorka. I love to do this show. Sometimes I have to be somewhere else. Salem has me traveling the country, especially in election years. This year is no exception. So then I have to pick a guest host, and I like to pick it amongst people who are known to you, our dear listeners. And now and again, I've been resorting to, I don't know what possesses me, a certain former weapons sergeant from the Green Berets. He's known as Uncle Jimbo. And instead of having regular guests on the show last time, I think he filled the airways for 3 hours guest hosting with everybody he knew from the Green Berets. One of those individuals, who is now a state representative in the Commonwealth of Virginia, is a known quantity to me, and he performed so well when Jim Hansen was in the chair that I've decided to invite him for a one-on-one. Nick Freitas, welcome to America First.
No, it's great to be back.
All right, so you've been on my radar for years. We've bumped into each other at various political events. Then you came on the show when Jim was hosting a week ago or 2 weeks ago. And I wanted to get you back, not simply because of your performance then with Jim, but because of something you said in the assembly maybe a month or 2 months ago. It's a slightly longer cut, but it cuts to the core of the problem with politics in America today. So let's listen to what Nick has to say about a certain political party.
I've never gone on this floor, Mr. Speaker, and suggested that the other side of the aisle were racist because they didn't agree with my particular policy positions. I've never suggested they were sexist because they didn't agree with my particular policy positions. But I'm keeping a running tally so far of this session. We're not very far into it. And almost every day, someone on the other side of the aisle either gets up and either subtly or comes right out and suggests that if you don't agree with them on policy, well, then you're not a Christian. You're a sexist. You're a bigot. You're a racist. But the moment someone actually stands up and says, wait a second, no, I'm not going to accept that. If you want to debate me on the merits of our particular policies, I am happy to have that discussion. But the moment you claim, with no evidence other than we don't agree on a particular policy position, the moment you claim that that makes us racist or sexist or bigoted, Mr. Speaker, I've got news. This was tried during the election cycle. You had a lot of parents coming to their local elected officials asking questions about what was going on in their schools. And the initial response was, oh, it's not there. And then when they saw evidence that it was, based off of what their kids were coming home and saying to them, and they went back and reissued the concern, then they got told, oh, well, then you must be a racist. Because that has been the repeated narrative coming from certain members of the other side of the aisle. And there's been a lot of times we've sat here politely and just took it. Mr. Speaker, not this time. I'm tired of it. My constituents are tired of it. Because when these claims are made, they're not just made against Governor Youngkin. They're not just made against us. They're made in part against the people that elected to send us here. And I don't know a single person in this chamber that I would define as racist or sexist or bigoted. We have very different ideas about how to get to particular end states where all Virginians can be happy, healthy, prosperous, and free. But just so I'm very clear, will I be nice this session? I would certainly like to be, but I'm not about to sit here and listen to that, Mr. Speaker, and then go home to my constituents and have them ask me, why didn't you stand up and defend us?
Delegate Freitas, That was a superb speech. We need more of that. We'll talk about why you had to make it in a second. But first, talk to us about your journey from being a weapons and intelligence sergeant in the Green Berets and then ending up in the Virginia House of Delegates.
Yeah, but back when I had a respectful occupation. I joined them, enlisted in the Army right out of high school. I also got married right out of high school. My wife and I got married at 19. Married for 23 years now, did a couple of combat tours in Iraq. And when I got out of the service...
But you were 82nd Airborne first.
Yeah, 82nd Airborne.
And then you did the selection course.
Yeah, 82nd Airborne, 25th Infantry. In fact, I just moved over to the 25th Infantry when September 11th happened.
Okay.
And that's when I sat down, talked with my wife, and said I was going to volunteer for Special Forces, went through the Q course.
That was a function of 9/11?
Yeah.
That decision?
Yeah, it was. Because at that point, you know, we were largely a peacetime Army. And as much as I liked the Army, I was considering at that point actually getting out and becoming a police officer. And when 9/11 happened, we all knew what we were going to be doing for the next at least decade at that point is what we thought, but it ended up being much longer. And Special Forces was the surgery I wanted to go on because I watched what they were doing in Afghanistan and how they were conducting operations, and that's what I wanted to be. And so I had an opportunity to go through the Q course, served with 1st Special Forces Group, did a couple of tours in Iraq. Loved being a Green Beret. Absolutely loved being a Green Beret. I was on my second tour in Iraq when Obama got elected. And I remember at that point in 2008, we had just gotten to just trying to get outside the wire and do your job. And keep in mind, this is not a unit full of a bunch of, you know, younger soldiers. We're all mature, older soldiers, senior non-commissioned officers. And the amount of a rigmarole that you had to go through just to go do your job was horrendous. And we knew it was going to get worse, and it did. And so there was actually 3 people on a team of 12 guys that decided, you know, we're out. We're not reenlisting. And that was a tough decision.
Because you couldn't do your job. That was mainly the reason.
If you're going to tell me, like all of us understood when we went to Special Forces, we were going to spend a lot of time away from our families. We all understood that we were going to be in dangerous situations. But originally, we had had the freedom to conduct operations and to be trusted to conduct those operations in a professional manner. And it felt like we were getting to the point where it was just PowerPoint after PowerPoint and restrictions. And
lawyers getting in the way, the White House getting in the way.
Oh, it's amazing how the, Clausewitz says that war is politics by other means. Well, we have no idea when it becomes so political that it becomes impossible to actually conduct the war in an effective manner, and that drove a lot of us to leave at that point.
So you separated in 2009.
2009.
You worked counter IED for a private company, correct?
Worked for a company that was founded by former Special Forces. I did a lot of work in the counter ID intelligence analysis, counterterrorism analysis, things of that nature. Yeah.
And then why on earth do you want to become a politician?
I did it. I had a friend of mine. The first time I got asked to run for office, I was involved because from the time I was little, my mother had been the head of a Republican women's organization, and she always impressed upon me that it was important to be involved. And so that's where I was involved, on a volunteer basis and helping out with other candidates and things of that nature. The first time I got asked to run for office, I was like, no, I'm not doing that. And the second time I got asked, my wife really sat down and talked to me, and she goes, you know, you talk a lot about the various issues, about the problems that are going on in the country at a philosophical level. She goes, if you're not willing to go in when people are asking you to, she goes, that's not really the guy I know. And, you know, your wife always knows how to get you. But so ran for office, had a really good friend that helped out. I still work with him now. And ran for the House of Delegates and won that seat.
And when was that?
This was in 2015 is when the election was sworn in 2016. Yeah.
And then the last 6 years?
It's been interesting. You know, kind of a unique thing. I represent James Madison's district.
30th and, district.
Yeah, and I tease my constituents that this district started off with James Madison, and now you got me. it's been interesting on a number of levels, not just to see what's gone on in the Commonwealth of Virginia, because when I came in, we had a 64-seat Republican majority. And now we have a 2-seat Republican majority, and there was a hiatus in there for 2 years where we didn't even have that.
Yeah.
We're in the minority. And I saw what happened when Democrats controlled the governorship, the attorney general's office, the Senate, lieutenant governor, House of Delegates. And it was amazing because you could tell what they were going to do next by whenever they started a sentence with, nobody wants to insert blank. Nobody wants to take your guns. Nobody wants to teach CRT to your kids. Nobody wants to. And you found out as soon as they got power, that's exactly what they wanted to do. And the fundamental shift in the way that the parties look at what this country means and what it represents, I think, has changed drastically since I was younger.
Right. Well, I still haven't got to unpack what the reason was for that speech you gave at the beginning. I think it's a crucial, crucial new way of looking at politics in America. Follow this man at Nick for VA on Twitter, Nick Freitas, that's F-R-E-I-T-A-S on Truth Social. I'm Sebastian Gorka. This is America First. If you haven't seen it already, 2,000 Mules has been breaking records across the nation. More than 400 theaters have carried it, more than 1 million downloads in the first 6 days, 100,000 DVDs mailed out. If you haven't seen it, you've got no excuse. Dinesh D'Souza has even dropped the price recently. They told you you were a conspiracy theorist. It was the safest election in American history. Well, here's the evidence of how they stole it. 2 petabytes worth of data, more than 4 million minutes of footage. It's 2,000 Mules. It is so important. I have a stake in this movie. Watch it today. Go to salemnow.com, 2,000 Mules, salemnow.com. And if you enjoy our deep dive discussions here on America First, make sure that you are subscribed. Go to Spotify, plug in my name, Sebastian Gorka, America First. It's absolutely free. Write a little review, share the links, and guarantee that you never, ever miss an episode. If you haven't done so already, register for our Stand With Israel tour 10 days later this year. We're traveling to the Holy Land with my Salem colleague, Dinesh D'Souza, and his lovely wife, Debbie, for the trip of a lifetime. Even if you've been to Israel before, you haven't been with me and Dinesh. Israel has dropped all its COVID restrictions. I'm not vaccinated, and I'm going. So if you want to stand on the shores of the Sea of Galilee, where our Lord and Savior Jesus stood, if you want to visit the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, the Garden of Gethsemane, join us. Reserve your places today. Call 855-565-5519 or just go to standwithisraeltour.com. That's 855-565-5519, standwithisraeltour.com. Dear friends, you know my friend Mike Lindell has a passion to help everyone get the best sleep of their lives. He didn't stop by simply creating the best pillow. Now Mike has done it again by introducing his My Slippers. For a limited time, you'll get $90 off a pair of My Slippers. This blowout sale of the year won't last, so order now. They took over 2 years to develop. They're designed to wear indoor and out. I've already worn out my first pair of My Slippers, and they're made with the same amazing My Pillow foam and impact gel to help prevent fatigue and lined with real suede. Call 800-829-8468. Use promo code Gorka for that massive discount, or just go to mypillow.com and click on the radio listener square and put in the secret code G-O-R-K-A. This offer won't last long. You won't regret it. They are the best slippers I have ever owned. And $90 off MyPillow.com. Do it today. Promo code G-O-R-K-A. Nick, I have a certain role that I have accepted. It's to be pugnacious. It's to be leaning in. I'm not paid to be nice, especially when it comes to the other side. I'm at peace with it. Members of my family, certain members of my family think you could dial it back a little bit, Dad. I've got my, my concept of operations. I got my mission brief. This is what I'm happy with. That speech you gave that we played a clip from, it speaks to that issue a little bit, mm-hmm. that we are told we should be nice, that mm-hmm. Republicans should be nice. And my argument is, why should we be nice mm-hmm. when not just you or me or my former boss, the president, but 64 million Americans are being called deplorable, mm-hmm. are being called ultra-MAGA, are being called racist, are being called Islamophobe, homophobic, Nazis by the end of the Trump administration. Mm-hmm. Tell us what it's like after 6 years to be in the same building as people who, I don't know whether behind closed doors they believe mm-hmm. it, but when they make public statements, they say, yes, you're a Republican, therefore you must be a fascist. Mm-hmm. Can you work with these people? Is it a show? Do they truly believe it? Talk to us.
For some people, it's a show. For some people, I think they truly believe it.
Yeah.
And you can usually see the distinction pretty quickly. Honestly, I have less respect for the people that are just putting on a show. I'd rather someone be intellectually honest, if that's what you really think, then tell me, and now I know the paradigm that we're operating within.
But also, I get that. But if they're honest about it, it's also demented. I
mean,
to say that 64 million Americans are Nazis.
It's unhinged. But to some degree, it kind of makes sense with this postmodernist nihilistic philosophy.
Right.
Is that you have to convince everybody that your opponent is just naturally a horrible, evil human being, and that's why you shouldn't even listen to the argument they made. And I didn't first, the first time I experienced that in the General Assembly was actually in 2018, and it was after the Parkland shooting. And I gave a speech on the Second Amendment, and I didn't think anything of it. I was just trying to stand up and defend why it is that we both want to protect children and protect the individual's right to be able to defend themselves.
At the
same time. Right. These are not conflicting or contradictory positions. So I gave a 7-minute speech. 4 Democrats left the floor in tears. The entire Democratic caucus requested a 15-minute recess to compose themselves.
Hang on. Did you insult them? Did you threaten them?
No. For days, they had been calling us Nazis. They had said that we were the equivalent of segregationists, that we are the equivalent of engaging in mass resistance, which is kind of a dog whistle to being a racist.
Did any of you leave in tears when they did
No,
that?
Of course not. We were able to have adults like conversations like adults. The one thing I said, that here's what frustrated them. Because they compared us to segregationists, and I said, let me tell you something. I said, I have a real problem with being compared to segregationists, because last time I checked, it was not my party that supported slavery, that fought against women's suffrage, that locked up Japanese Americans in internment camps, that supported mass resistance, that supported Jim Crow.
You said that
was the Democrat Party.
You said that on the floor?
I said that on the floor.
Okay. Which is all statements of fact.
You know what it is? It's hard history, Sebastian.
Yeah.
Right? It's hard history. And they were furious by this. Now, I caveated that. When I said all of that, I then said, now, I don't believe a single member of the current Democratic Party sitting in this room believes those things or would have supported those things. So, but I don't appreciate you bringing up the sins of your party's past and projecting them onto us every time you want to try to make a strong point. And they just lost their minds. And for the next 2 days on the House floor, I was a racist. I was a mean person. And it was incredible, because some of these were people that we might have disagreed on policy, but we could have friendly conversations. And it changed almost overnight because of that.
So let's stop then and talk about that.
Yeah.
So what are the consequences, and what are the conversations like? Because we know on the floor it's a little bit different. We know in Congress people say things that they know they can actually legally get away with. They can't be, you can't be sued for libel from the floor of the Congress, which explains Adam Schiff, for example. So what was it like, for example, outside of the delegation? Were these people... How did your life change? I mean, after that speech, in terms of working with these people or trying to work with these people?
Sure. Well, there was one member from the other side of the aisle who actually came to my office the next day. I have a lot of respect for him. Again, we don't agree much on policy.
Uh-huh.
But he came to my mind, he goes, Nick, he goes, I need you to explain why you said what you said.
Oh, really? So he was curious.
He did. And we had a great conversation. And again, it's not like we left that room agreeing with one another on the policy. But he actually made a concerted effort.
To listen.
To listen, to understand perspective, and to share his in a way that I could receive it and understand where he was coming from. And to this day, I still consider him someone that I respect and admire and can work with. A lot of other people's approach was just to simply... put me in a particular category, and now I was a mean person. Now, the people on their side of the aisle that get up almost on a daily basis, and that's not an exaggeration, almost on a daily basis, and every time they talk about a situation, there's always this insinuation that if you don't agree with them, the only explanation could be that you're a bigot or a sexist or you're ignorant.
Right.
We don't have the same reaction to them. And I think to some degree, it's almost because we know they're putting on a show. But I've gotten to the point where, no, you're not just... I realized one day, you're not just saying this to me. You're saying it to my constituents.
Bingo.
You're calling my constituents this. And now I'm pissed off. Because I can take a lot, but you don't have any right to accuse the people that put their faith in me to come here to not only vote the appropriate way and carry the right legislation, but to actually make an argument for what they believe in a way that they can be proud of. You don't have a right to call those people that and go unanswered.
Has that day when you made that speech, either the Second Amendment one or the one we played a clip from, has it made your life harder, your job easier? Has it clarified things? What is the...
I think it's... Well, like you said, like I never went into politics with this attitude that I was there to be adversarial. I knew we were talking about adversarial issues, but not adversarial. And it's gotten to the point where I would love it if we could have difficult conversations with one another and still... you know, be okay afterwards. I've come to the conclusion that with a lot of people on the other side of the aisle, that's not possible.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to stop telling the truth. I will always try to tell it in the most effective way possible. I always try to tell it in a way that, you know, corresponds with my faith. But I'm not going to stop saying it because it makes you uncomfortable. And that's what they've done now, is they've created this situation where the moment they are offended, we're all supposed to shut up. And whether or not we're offended is irrelevant to them. Well, that's not a dialogue.
No.
And I'm not willing to accept that.
Right. Well, we're bad people. We think that they are human beings who have really bad ideas. We're going to Nick Freitas. Please support those that make our show possible. Great patriots like Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. They want to crush him. They want to cancel him. Now, Walmart has banned his products. Please support him. Go to MyPillow.com. Use my name, G-O-R-K-A, for up to 66% off. Let's show Mike we have his back. Call 800-829-8468 or just go to MyPillow.com, promo code G-O-R-K-A.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-702-5400. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-702-5400. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-702-5400.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
It would be seriously remiss of me if I didn't ask you this question, given your background. So, you know my background. So I'm an immigrant, a legal immigrant. I naturalized in 2012, ended up in the White House working for President Trump. But for about the last decade, I had quite a close relationship with Bragg. I've been teaching as a guest instructor on the Q course, the 18 Alpha Officers course, and also the Warrant Officers, the 18 Alpha course as well. No, the 180 Alpha, yeah, as well. And I love it. And I love those guys, especially when you're talking to warrants, you know, who've had nine tours in the sandbox. Yeah. You're not teaching them anything. You're standing there with the cadre just listening to what they have to say. Yeah. But given that association, what we've witnessed in the last 16 months, you're well plugged in with your brotherhood back at Bragg and elsewhere. Your reaction, your comments to what is politely termed the wokeification of the American military, what we've seen in terms of the pride flag being flown over the Air Force recruits in that recent Twitter ad, Mark Milley saying, yes, we have, I'm white and we have to understand white rage. How bad is it? What are you hearing and how concerned are you as a former operator?
Well, people are very frustrated because they feel like, you know, I saw this tweet today and they were talking about, you know, the Navy pushing for safe spaces. And like, you know, it used to be that the safe space the military was responsible for was the United States and keeping it safe from foreign militaries and foreign threats.
Nice.
Now, all of a sudden, the military has once again become a petri dish for social engineering,
right,
for the left. And there's a lot of frustration because, again, if you go into the military, and I think especially certain careers in the military that you know are going to put you in a great deal of danger, there's a certain expectation that you're going to have a strong grip on reality because you don't get to play the games that we do in the sociology class at Cal Berkeley when it gets to the battlefield. Things like biology matters, reality matters, and when you start to ignore that, people die from that. This is not the typical Elizabeth Warren where, you know, if you don't agree for every regulation she likes, you want people to die. No, we operate in an environment where people die when we don't recognize reality for what it is.
If you deny reality, there are costs.
There is. And there's no avoiding them. And so I think people are getting to the point where, and you see the same thing within law enforcement as well, whenever you require people to go into dangerous situations, and then you require them to repeat or regurgitate or believe things that are obviously untrue or don't correspond with reality, you're putting them in additional danger. And what you're inevitably doing at that point is you're teaching those people to essentially not do the most dangerous parts of their job, because that's where there's risk involved. And that risk is not just the physical risk of getting hurt. That risk now is associated with legal realities that never existed before. And so if you say the wrong thing, even if it's factually true, but it's not politically popular, your career can be over. Well, you're going to do one of two things in that scenario. You're either going to drive people out, or you're going to cause them to modify their behavior in a way that's not conducive to the actual mission that they signed up for.
So which is it going to be? What's their expectation? Whether it's the vaccine mandates, whether it's the wokeification, what is going to happen to the military fighting force of America?
You're going to see more and more people leave. Yeah. And I think the other thing that is going to be really critical about this next election cycle is not just who we elect as president or members of Congress or members of the Senate or House and the Senate. It's going to be what we do with the actual bureaucratic positions, both within the federal government itself and within the military. Because, you know, whatever you want to call it, and people always mocked this whole idea of the deep state, I just call it the long-term bureaucracy.
Yeah, that's good.
Right? When you have people that have been there forever and can essentially ride out the next administration or the commanding officer of a particular unit or schoolhouse, then they're the ones that are really driving policy. And I don't think anybody ever intended for that, but that's the practical reality. And so we're going to have to be really careful about what sort of culture that we foster within the military and within our government. And look, I'm a huge believer in individual liberty. I'm a huge believer that the role of the government is not to sit here and try to micromanage society. I think it's to preserve your right to pursue happiness in accordance with your definition of it, provided that you don't infringe on the rights or liberties of others. Well, that's not what we're seeing right now. We're now seeing that this is now the government-approved narrative, and if you don't repeat it, there will be consequences.
And how bad is it? What are you hearing from Bragg?
Oh, guys are concerned. Guys are very concerned with respect to where it's going, especially within the combat arms realm. And again, it's a lot of people assume that, well, if you let a woman go to Ranger school, then all of us are against that. No, if a woman can go to Ranger school and pass Ranger school, we will actually come alongside that and say, hey, look, the standard's the standard. And if you met
it, if they pass a standard that hasn't been diluted.
If you pass a standard that hasn't been diluted, welcome.
Right.
But there's still physical realities to the infantry, to armor, to special operations. And we don't want those diluted because, again, that's how people get killed trying to do their duty. And I think a lot of people are more concerned that we're at a point right now where there's always a target on their back. Did you say the wrong thing? Did you mean the wrong thing? Was it interpreted the wrong thing? And when you're talking about a group of like special operators where we go into environments where we see some pretty horrible things and we got to deal with some pretty horrible things, and now we've got to worry that, you know, something we said in the team room was misunderstood by somebody that walked down a hallway and now our career's over.
We're talking to Delegate Nick Freitas. Follow him on Twitter, Nick for VA and Nick Freitas on Truth Social. I'm Sebastian Gorka. If you've got one of these dastardly things, if you've got a cell phone, please guarantee it is not connected to the big cell phone providers because they're not on your side. When Verizon caved and gave my phone data, my wife's and my children's phone data to Nancy Pelosi's witch hunt January 6th committee, I said, that's it. I switched immediately. I went with the only Christian conservative cell phone company in America, Patriot Mobile. You can switch today. You can keep your old number. Special discounts for veterans and first responders. Use my name for free activation. Call today, 972-PATRIOT, or go to patriotmobile.com/GORKA. This company has donated hundreds of thousands of dollars to causes you believe in, the sanctity of life, the First Amendment, the Second Amendment. Join the good guys who love America as much as you do. That's 972-728-7468 or patriotmobile.com/GORKA. 972-PATRIOT, patriotmobile.com/GORKA. Now, I haven't rehearsed any of what I have to say. We don't clear talking points with our guests because we prefer it that way. So you can be a politician and kind of skate past the answer to this question, but I'm going to put it up there. You're a Republican. You're a delegate in the Commonwealth. We have a new governor, Governor Youngkin. He came on my show after 2 months of his team trying to blow us off. He performed kind of middlingly. I think he's a good guy. I think he's a man of God. I think he's surrounded by rhinos. I think he has some very bad advisors. And I'm very disappointed when it comes to the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. The fact is, to picket outside a judge's home to influence a decision is a federal crime. Mm-hmm. To picket outside a private individual's residence in the Commonwealth is also a crime. Mm-hmm. And to this day, the governor has done nothing. He has said, I've written a letter to Biden's attorney general, despite mm-hmm. the fact that he controls the state troopers in Virginia. He could deploy them yesterday. He's done some good things when it comes to Psiati and other things. You can address him directly, or mm-hmm. you can talk about the state of conservatism in the Commonwealth. How are we doing, Nick?
We could be doing better. we're doing a lot better than we were. There's a couple areas where I give Governor Youngkin just an enormous amount of credit. And that is he really stayed strong on supporting genuine educational choice.
Which is what got him elected.
It is, and it should, and it's because it's one of the most fundamental issues with respect to the future of our country right now. Because so many of the problems that we currently face, they didn't start yesterday. They were manufactured in schools and universities for decades, and now we're seeing them come to fruition. And so addressing the issue of educational freedom and the way he's done it, I think, is important, because you'll notice the left is essentially saying, we want to control your child's education.
Oh, they've said it.
We're not saying that. Right. I'm not saying I want to control your kid's education. I'm saying I want to control my child's education.
Yes.
And that's difference.
Good. That's good.
I'm perfectly willing for you to control your child's education. I'll control mine. And the fact that that's not good enough for the left tells me everything I need to know about what their real agenda is. So I think he's done an excellent job there. I think he's done an excellent job on pushing back on, you know, just the devastating nature of CRT as a philosophy. And really not giving into this whole idea, because the left for a while has been like, okay, well, show me the textbook in an elementary school with CRT. Nobody's saying that. What you're doing is actually worse. If you put it in a textbook, that at least would be honest.
Yeah.
But no, instead what you're doing is you're requiring all of our teachers to go through this training with the expectation that they will go back into the classroom and teach every topic through that lens.
Bingo.
And he has really fought against that well. There's a lot more to do. The problem that I have, and again, this always sounds like an excuse, but it is a practical reality of the way that our government operates. There was a lot more that we could have gotten done this year, and we did. We got it through the House. Where Republicans were in charge, we got it through.
Are you talking about Virginia?
Yes, okay. And then it went to the Senate, and it all died. Okay. It all died, and the governor was able to get through some things on school choice. Like, they had gutted school choice in the budget, and when the governor came down with the amendment, and that drastically increased it. And then he also really tried to also protect life by inserting the Hyde Amendment as well. And he came right out and supported like a 20-week ban, which, again, that was a strong move, I think, on his part. So on a lot of those areas, I've been very impressed with what the governor has done and sticking by his guns in a substantive way. It would have been so easy to stand up there and say, oh, yeah, we're gonna have a couple more charter schools in Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Is that genuine school choice?
Right.
But no, he actually fought for something harder. He actually fought for ESAs. He actually fought for more lab schools. And for me, that is like one of the, and as someone that sits on the education committee, that is one of the fundamental issues going forward with respect to whether or not we're serious about saving our country. Because if we're just changing things here and there, but we're not actually allowing students to be able to get a quality education that is not just completely monopolized by their government, well, then we shouldn't be, as Vodi Bakum said, you can't send your kids to... You can't send your kids to Caesar for their education and be surprised when they come home as Romans. And we have a situation right now where we've got a lot of good teachers. They're not the ones picking the curriculum.
Yeah.
Right? That's controlled by politicians. And again, we're not saying we want Republican politicians to control the curriculum or the classroom.
Parents.
We want there to be genuine choice and options within the system. And I think he did a really good job in fighting for that. I think all of us want to see more protections for our Supreme Court justices. We have to do that correctly. One of the things I'll be very, very upfront about on this, I don't know a single person that doesn't agree with the, you know, picketing outside a juror or a justice's home is absolutely off beyond the pale. It has to stop. There was some other moves to try to include it to like protesting outside of a courthouse. Okay, that's where we get a little bit dangerous. That's where you have to actually look two steps ahead and recognize that, okay, now you have a George Soros-backed Commonwealth's attorney in Fairfax and Loudoun counties.
Yep.
That now is going to take away your Second Amendment rights,
right,
your voting rights, charge you with a felony because you had a sign saying, you know, you protect life outside of a courthouse. So it's about making sure that we're doing our job. And when we respond to a threat, responding to it in such a way that still preserves individual liberty, First Amendment rights, but also making a distinction that showing up to a courthouse is not the same as showing up to a judge's home. Now you're engaging in intimidation, and that's unacceptable.
Whether it's not being willing to protect the justices' homes, whether it's other politicians or even business owners not standing up to the COVID restrictions and the business shutdowns, how much of our problem writ large is simply a general lack of courage, Nick?
Oh, it's a significant part. I said this once to somebody when they were asking me to explain this. It's, you know, two things I learned, or one thing, a major thing I learned in both combat and in politics. Cowardice is contagious. It is absolutely contagious, but so is courage. And when someone demonstrates that courage, they will be shocked to find out how many people are actually standing with them in a very true and substantive way. But by the same token, I look at a lot of, not just my colleagues, I look at a lot of people just within conservative circles. And the thing I've started telling them is, like, don't tell me what you're willing to fight for anymore. I'm tired of hearing that. Don't tell me what you're willing to, tell me what you're willing to sacrifice for. Because now I know what you're really willing to fight for. Because ultimately what this is we've gotten away for so long in this country to be able to fight for something where it doesn't really require any genuine sacrifice on our behalf. And I think what we're starved for right now is people that are willing to stand up and say, no, I'm not willing to comply with this. This is wrong and I won't do it. And the moment you get more of that, the moment you get a groundswell, here's the biggest thing that opens up in people's minds. All of a sudden, these little tiny despots in the federal government, they start to realize, we don't have the ability to actually enforce this.
Well, and also the good guys, the people who are standing up and who believe in liberty and civil rights and the First Amendment and the Second Amendment, actually outnumber the radicals or the people that you said are the members of the longtime bureaucracy. I like that. We're talking to Nick Freitas. I'm Sebastian Gorka. We are coming to you from the ReliefFactor.com studio, Relief Factor. Pain relief that works, pain relief that's real, pain relief that is liberating tens of thousands of Americans right now, me included. But it's not just me. It's people like Reggie from Florida. This is Reggie's story. I have a lot of pain from aging, and after only 4 days of using Relief Factor, I'm already experiencing less pain and stiffness. Can't wait to see how I feel in a couple more weeks. Relief Factor is a blessing sent by God. Powerful words. Find out for yourself. There's only one way, but it's super easy. Order the 3-week quick starter pack at ReliefFactor.com. It'll be at your door in 3 days or less. Take it morning and evening like I do, and I promise you, Dr. G's guarantee, by the end of those 3 weeks, you will know whether it works for you like it works for me, Reggie, and tens of thousands of your fellow Americans. You've waited long enough. You deserve to know. Find out now. Call 800-500-8384 or just go to ReliefFactor.com. The only thing you have to lose is the pain. 800-500-8384, ReliefFactor.com, ReliefFactor.com. Now, I've been saying, so I've been on the air, Nick, for over 3 years now, and I've been saying, like a broken record, I'm sure my team is bored of it already, that a little bit what you just said, you know, stop telling me how you love America or how you're going to fight for America. Actually do something. If you bitch and moan on my social media threads, the first thing I'm going to say is, oh yeah, what have you done about it? Have you run for office? My wife ran for the local community board. Have you worked on a campaign, or have you just voted every 2 years? Yeah. Is that what you do? Because seriously, if that's all you do, you're part of the problem. So I think, you know, the question is, what are you prepared to do? It's going to be easy for a former Green Beret weapons sergeant to say, well, now I'm going to be a politician, a citizen, you know, politician. But you don't have to be a Green Beret to do something. So we've got 3 million people listening to you right now. We've got people watching as well. What is your message to everybody out there who's worried, concerned for the Republic, or just fed up?
I think there's a few things.
Yeah.
One is, obviously, you have to be involved in the political process because the political process is going to be involved with you.
Right.
So I get it. We, especially as conservatives, our priorities usually go something like God, family, country, work, and then politics is a distant fifth.
Yeah.
Okay. If you don't get more involved in politics, politics is going to be involved in God, family, country, your work, and the whole deal.
That's excellent.
You have to do that, whether it's running for office, supporting, whatever it is. The second thing is, Stop looking for government to solve all of your problems. The vast majority of your problems and challenges that you face in your life have been solved by people working through voluntary cooperation within their churches, community, and marketplace, not by giving more power to bureaucrats and politicians. So be careful with the sort of person that you vote for, but also be careful with the sort of things that you demand from your government. Thomas Sowell has one of the best quotes over, and he goes, "One of the reasons why so many politicians are such shameless liars is because when people start demanding of government things that it cannot possibly do, only liars will satisfy." And so it's about looking at, if I see a problem, the first thing I should do is not be saying to myself, I need a new law or a new subsidy or a new tax or a new regulation. And then finally, the third component is this: you choose to be free. And I mean that. I am so tired of raising generations of Americans that believe that they're just succumbing to circumstances beyond their control. You choose to be free. And that counts with your kids' education. That counts with the food that you get. That counts with the health. There's so many different ways that you can engage with, you know, other free people, whether it's within the economy, whether it's in education, whether it's healthcare. You don't have to accept what politicians are telling you have to accept. There is a way to engage in a kind of, you know, let's still engage in the passive resistance before we have to get to anything else.
Right.
And when we do that, and when we do it effectively, I think it really has an impact. But the number one thing I always tell people, now more than ever, you really have to be careful on how your kids are being educated. Because if you're delegating it to someone else, you don't delegate the responsibility. You don't delegate the responsibility, all right? You're delegating the consequences.
What's your website?
So Nick4VA is my website.
Nick4VA, he's quoted Vodi Bochum and Thomas Sowell in one interview. I'm impressed. Follow this man, Nick Freitas, on social media platforms. I'm Sebastian Gorka. Wherever you are, keep your head in a swivel, watch your six, hold the line. Never give up, never give in, and stay frosty.
Our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The world will little note or long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here.
I have a dream. Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
I can hear you. The rest of the world hears you. And the people... and the people who knock these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
And we will make America great again.
This is America First with Sebastian Gorka.
Welcome, dear friends. This is America First. Let's start with the most important thing, not the Supreme Court decision that was passed down just this morning, but something to do with the individual whose name was on that decision. Happy birthday, Associate Justice Clarence Thomas. God bless you. A man with the most infectious laugh in America. Yes, if you haven't seen it, we'll play it later for you. The decision is a monumental one. It comes with regards to New York and their unconstitutional requirement when it comes to proving why you need a gun to carry one out of your home. New York said you can have one in your home, but that's it, because the Second Amendment doesn't apply outside your home. Wrong, New York. And Justice Thomas has set that in stone with a majority decision that makes New York, or should very briefly, very, very soon, make New York a shall-issue state, meaning if you pass the requirements for not having a criminal record and you apply for a concealed carry permit, they shall issue the permit because they've lost their case in the highest court in the land. More to discuss on the issue of the Second Amendment, the 14 fake Republicans in the Senate are pushing forward with their bill that will do nothing to prevent events like Uvalde. Marjorie Taylor Greene has a message for states that do not have the Second Amendment. And a 13-year-old child who tried to kill a cop has admitted that, yes, that's exactly what I was trying to do. Of course, that is what we are fighting. Not the weapons, the intent, and the latest from Uvalde concerning the security, the police chief of that school. He has been put on leave indefinitely, a man who has not given a press conference once since those 19 children were murdered and those two teachers were killed as well. Staying on the Second Amendment, here is Senator John Cornyn, shockingly, of Texas, who had this to say about the largest Second Amendment organization in the NRA.
NRA listened to their concerns, but in the end, I think they simply they have a membership and a business model that will not allow them to support any legislation. And so I understand where they're coming from, but I think most people will not allow any outside group to veto good public policy.
So utterly detached, so completely and utterly detached. Their membership, 3.5 million people. Now, don't confuse me with things I've said in the past, or don't get confused with what I'm saying today. The NRA has problems, serious problems, with the president being re-selected, not re-elected. That's Wayne LaPierre. They have very serious credibility issues at their headquarters in Fairfax, Virginia. Nevertheless, it is the oldest civil rights organization of its kind. If it were functioning properly, as it has done in prior elections, it can mobilize literally millions and millions of voters who care about the Constitution and care about our rights. That's not the case right now, but what Cornyn is saying is not anything relevant to Wayne LaPierre or the Fairfax headquarters. He's saying that his policy is good policy. Why? There is nothing in that bill, not one measure that would have stopped the Uvalde shooter. If you look at the statistics coming out of the Crime Prevention Center under the great John Lott, if you look at the recent piece we discussed here from the Epoch Times, the only two stats that are relevant are the fact that 97% of recent mass shootings have occurred in so-called gun-free zones. 97%. On top of that, if you look at the recent mass shootings involving young males, more than 90% of those individuals were under some kind of serious psychiatric medication. Now, if a bill came along that said gun-free zones are banned because they're insane, they're illogical, and they are magnets for criminals and psychotics. Remember the Aurora movie theater shooting? The person who went into the premiere night of the Batman movie was found in his apartment to have maps detailing all the no-gun areas around him, all the theaters that had a gun-free zone sign outside them. And he deliberately picked one where he knew that there would be no one armed, or that if they were, they were transgressing the local protocols. Let's stop for a second here. Let's drill down on this question of that sticker. You've seen the decal. You've gone to the shopping mall, and you've seen on the glass door as you walk in from the car park, the sign with a handgun and like the Ghostbusters red line through it. What kind of person believes that actually means anything? What kind of child do you have to be? What mental incompetent do you have to be to think, oh, that decal that will stop a mugger, that will stop a gangbanger, that will stop a psycho. How bereft of common sense do you have to be to believe in the logic of a gun-free zone and the stickers on the entrance to the shopping mall? If, on the contrary, Senator Cornyn had said, no, we're not going to support gun-free zones. On the contrary, we want to use not, what was it, how much was it, $40 billion we're sending to Ukraine? How about we have $1 billion? Just $1 billion. I'll settle for $500,000. NPR. NPR gets $500 million a year from you. So let's take the budget of NPR, that is a propaganda arm of the Democrat Party, shouldn't receive any federal funding because that's a contribution in kind. That's campaign funding. It's illegal. Shouldn't happen. Let's take $500 million. Let's take $500 million and place an armed veteran at every school district. Every school. In every school district, who has a vest that has ceramic plates, that is trained to deal with these scenarios with their military background, and who has a long arm, has an M4 or equivalent, and a sidearm. Now, that's a bill that I could support. Or how about a bill that would investigate the rampant use of very serious psychiatric drug treatments for men under 25 in America. Now that would be intriguing. I'd support that. I'd support my taxpayer money being used for that, because maybe we could get to the bottom of why there are mass shootings occurring in 97% gun-free zones, and more than 90% of the young males who perpetrate those acts are under some kind of psychiatric drug treatment. But no, he's a rhino, so it won't happen. He'll virtue signal, and he's not running for re-election, so he doesn't care. He's just virtue signaling to the lobbying company and the board of the company he wants to join after he leaves Capitol Hill. I'm Sebastian Gorka. We're only getting started here. This is America First. Don't forget to subscribe. Go to Spotify. Plug in my name, America First, Sebastian Gorka. Never miss an episode. It's absolutely free. Write a review. It does make a difference. And share the links. We'll be back with Breitbart's very own Matt Boyle.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.